You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to another new episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. We're chatting on this Thursday evening. It's an off day for the Rockets. 8-game winning streak after taking care of business. Huge win over the Kings, 132-98 on Wednesday night. Back in action tomorrow night, Friday, against the Pelicans at Toyota Center. That's the fourth game of a 4-game homestand. Then they go back on the road, a little bit tougher schedule in the next couple of weeks to close out December. But for now, there's lots positive to take in. And with the Rockets, as we said, 19-7 and currently on pace to basically be a 60-win team, now third in the West and easily within striking distance of the Spurs for number two. There's been a lot of talk lately about just how the Rockets might translate as a playoff team, because going into this year, a lot of the expectation, even the optimistic folks around Houston, were hoping to win close to 50 games and maybe be a mid-tier playoff team. But now that we're basically a third of the way into the season, this is no small sample size. The Rockets aren't just a mid-tier playoff team. They're potentially a really good team in the Western Conference, in the upper echelon, and you know they're capable of competing with anyone besides the Warriors based on all the metrics we have at this point. Again, it's not just the record. It's the fact that, you know, it's the margin of victory. Every indicator that we have suggests the Rockets are, in fact, this good. And when they go up against bad teams like the Kings last night or the Lakers last week, more often than not, they just destroy them. There's nothing lucky about this start at all. And I'd contrast it to 2 years ago. You know, yeah, 2 years ago when they were kind of written off after the Chris Bosh and Chandler Parsons offseason, they started off 16-4 and ultimately ended up winning 56 games, getting to the Western Conference Finals. That team always overachieved a little bit. And so certainly it's fun to watch. But when they were 16-4, if you looked at the margin of victory, it was not sustainable, and you would expect a little bit of regression. Now, thankfully, they actually did sustain it through the regular season, and even though the metrics didn't suggest they were quite a mid to upper 50s win team, well, they got there, so you give them credit, but you always had to worry about would the lack of talent eventually catch up with them. Right now, the Rockets aren't just winning games. The metrics love them, too. Everything about them suggests that they are this good. So one of the questions is, okay, if they're this good of a regular season team, did we get it wrong? Can they compete in the playoffs? And so I've heard a lot of people breaking that down the last few days because, well, you have to take the Rockets seriously as a playoff team at this point. And one of the things that's intriguing about it, there's a lot of discrepancy in evaluating Mike D'Antoni's track record as a coach in the playoffs. There's a lot of people who, in my opinion, give him too much blame. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But for now, what I'm going to do to kind of guide this show, I'm going to play some new comments from an NBA scout. And I'll start by saying this is not the scout we have played before. The origins of this, of course, here at Locked On Rockets, we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And the national show, the hub for us, is called Locked On NBA. It's hosted by David Locke. He's the radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. Of course, he follows the league as a whole, has a ton of good connections. And one of the things that he does that I really enjoy, he gets a lot of scouts, personnel people, actually currently employed people around the NBA to come on his show and give some pretty good analysis, but in order to do so, they have to be anonymous, because obviously no one wants to give scouts takes and attach a name or a team to those. So they have to be kept anonymous, but if granted that, and David's willing to do that, you can hear some really interesting things. So before going any further, I'm going to play the comments from yesterday's Locked On NBA show. This is David Locke talking with an anonymous NBA scout, not one that we've had on this show before. And they talk about a few different things. I'm merging clips together here. But it starts by talking about James Harden. Then they go into discussion of preparing for the Rockets and also how the Rockets and this current system might translate to the playoffs. So without any further ado, I'm going to play those comments, and then in the back half of the show, I'm going to respond to those and tell you, well, where I think he's right and also where I think he's wrong.
Let's go to the next superhuman season, James Harden. What have you seen from him? He's really interesting, by the way, because if you dig in on him, he's actually not using any more possessions for himself than he always does. His usage rate is right around where it's always been. He's just he's just become much more of a point guard, really. What are you seeing out of him? And again, what would you report on any way to try to slow him? What would you do defensively to slow him down?
I really don't know if there's a way to slow him down because we always knew he was a good passer. We just didn't know how much, how well, or how good of a passer he is or was. But obviously Mike D'Antoni knew something that we didn't by putting the ball in his hands most of the time. But when you think about it, in the past, he was the primary ball handler. And so Mike just allows him to bring the ball up now and may dictate what happens on the court. He's another freak. He's another freak of nature. He can get to the rim anytime he wants. And now he's finding guys more so than what he was in the past. And the offense has a lot to do with it, too, the way they play. This is suited for him. This style of play is perfect for him. And now he can excel by having the ball in his hands the majority of the time, gets to the rim, can shoot it, and he can dish it. I don't know what you do. I mean, it's kind of like Russell. It's pick your poison. Are you gonna key on everybody else and let him score 50, or do you double team him every time, make him pass? But their tempo, they're so up and down that it's hard to double team because they move the ball so well and so fast.
Who's on your top? Actually, let's go to the other side. Who are you filling out reports for and being like, I don't have it. I don't know what they run. I don't. They're just playing basketball. There's value to that too, frankly, particularly in the playoffs. If you just play and it's hard to scout. So who is it out there that you kind of say, wow, I don't have anything for them?
Well, I mean, Phoenix Suns, they're so young and they make so many mistakes. You just leave the game asking yourself, what did I just see? What did I just watch? What did I just scout? The Denver Nuggets, another team, they run a random offense. They don't execute well. They run up and down and they break plays off. Houston, they're successful, but they don't call a lot of plays. But they're the one team that's having success, but that's just Mike D'Antoni's style. I mean, he gets the ball up the floor, they shoot threes. They don't do a lot of play calling. They just push the pace and want to outscore you. The Rockets are really interesting. I just don't know if they can sustain it through the playoffs because that's the history of Mike's teams. You know, because everybody makes you play a different style in the playoffs. You have to defend. You have to actually run some kind of offense called set plays in the playoffs because teams take that away from you, that freestyle stuff away from you.
It's interesting. Mike's feeling is that teams take away your structured offense in the playoffs and that his free structure system should work better in the playoffs.
That hasn't been proven in the past.
No, it hasn't. But that's what he feels.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Good stuff, as always, from Locked On NBA. Again, the host, the voice you heard there was David Locke, radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz, and he was talking with a currently employed NBA scout for another team, of course remaining anonymous because no one wants their opinions traced back to a specific team in case, well, the Rockets or anybody takes offense to this, which I don't think they will, but that's just something they have to do for safekeeping. Now, as far as his comments, I'll start with the easy ones, which are the ones about Harden. First off, give both Harden and Mike D'Antoni credit for seeing what not everyone saw. I think all of us in Houston bought into the Harden as point guard experiment rather easily, because if you watch James closely, of course you know he's a very good and very willing passer. So none of us are shocked by him averaging more than 11 assists per game and, you know, taking triple-doubles like it's candy. I mean, it's something that was very foreseeable for those of us in Houston. Saw people last year saying he'd average 15 assists a game if only he had more guys that can make open shots. Well, now in Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, he's got those guys, and shockingly, he's getting more assists. But beyond that, Harden said a lot of people wondered, beyond just the passing and is he selfish, which I think we all agree as, you know, Rockets fans is just silly. But beyond that, people wondered about usage. And people said, is it going to wear him down to be the point guard, to bring the ball up the floor? And one thing that James said, I remember his first interview after it, actually, he really liked it, because he said that he's not going to have to fight off the ball as much to get to the basketball. And so far, that's exactly what has played out. It's actually been easier for the Rockets to get into their offense with James Harden bringing the ball up the floor than it is to run him around the screen or come around a pick, whatever it may be, and take the ball at the top. It's actually reducing his workload, the amount of energy he has to put out there, in my opinion. So, yeah, that was a pretty good foresight by Mike D'Antoni, and you also have to give James Harden credit for, you know, understanding the game enough to see this coming. So I think that helps a lot. The other thing he mentioned that I thought was a really good point were how the Rockets' increased pace makes double teams difficult. Because when you think about where the Rockets have struggled this year, even a lot of their losses have been aesthetically pleasing. You know, I go back to like that Cleveland game. Yeah, you lost it, but you played really well. And of course, the Rockets won every game here in December. The last loss they had, and the last time I can think that it looked a little bit ugly, was that loss in Utah at the end of November, and that was one where Utah slowed it down, they were able to grind them out. And other games, I'd say the second half in Atlanta, even the win against Dallas back in Game 3, that was first weekend of the year when they scored just 30 points in the second half, and kind of the common thread between the second half of the Atlanta game, the Utah game, and that Dallas game in Houston, those are teams that were able to grind the Rockets down. They slowed the pace, and when they did that, when they got the Rockets out of the normal flow, they were able to trap James Harden hard on everything, force the ball out of his hands, and they were able to scramble well enough on defense to get out and still contest the shooters. And what the scout pointed out was, at the pace that the Rockets play, it is much more difficult to get a double team. So in other words, if you are getting James Harden the ball and letting him bring the ball up the floor, and they are going at that breakneck pace, it is really difficult to trap on him and not leave somebody else either wide open for a three or a lane to the basket. Because if you're gonna double team, it takes a lot of discipline elsewhere to basically occupy all other spots on the court. Because essentially you're gonna be having three guys guard four players. And if the game is slow enough, then you can understand what space you need to get to and execute it to an extent. But if you are going as fast as the Rockets are going, it can be very, very difficult for defenses to basically play 3-on-4 elsewhere. And so that's where the Rockets have been taking advantage. Either Harden passes it and they can get an open three or a lane to the basket, or more likely than not, they just don't double team that quickly and Harden can do something himself off the dribble and create. Either way, the Rockets are playing at a higher pace in December than November, and that's a big reason why, because D'Antoni is slowly getting them to see that that pace obviously works to your advantage in so many different ways. Now, the one area where it has not, and I do think this ties back into the same general theme, is late in games. We've seen a couple of games this month, Golden State and Oklahoma City, where things have gotten sticky for the Rockets late. On Twitter, you hear people say too much hero ball. Well, it's not just hero ball. It's not that James doesn't want to move the ball. He absolutely would be overjoyed to pass it for an open three or a layup. What happens in those games, first and foremost, those are good defensive teams in Golden State and Oklahoma City. You give a little bit of credit to them. It's not always about you. But beyond that, when you get late in games, there is a tendency, and it's not without merit, to play the clock. Because you, as an NBA team, especially if you have a lead, which the Rockets did often in those games, it's to your advantage to use 20 seconds of the shot clock. And when you do that, that is what slows your pace down, and that's what lets the defenses be able to trap and do some things that they can't when the Rockets play at their normal pace. Now, it's not as simple as saying, well, you just run your normal offense and, you know, forget about your normal end-of-game tendencies. You can't do that because there are situations where just the time in the game, you have to, you know, you have to use that time, and it makes more sense to use the full 24 seconds or close to it, because maybe your defense needs a break, maybe you just need to run that much time off the clock. I don't know. I mean, you can't just throw clock management out the window. But at the same line, it's a fine line to walk. And so that's one thing I'm sure Mike D'Antoni's pointed out on his film study, but for those wondering what happens to the Rockets, I don't think James Harden's trying to play hero ball. He's just trying to play the clock. Every player has that instinct. You see it all the time with James Harden with how well he handles these two-for-one scenarios. I don't think anybody in the league is more savvy and more, you know, all-knowing of clock issues than James. But the thing for the Rockets, you've got to find a way to balance that with the normal offense, because it's the normal offense that, as the scout was saying, makes it so difficult to double-team them and do things to stop them. So how do they find that balance? I don't know. Like I said, it's not as simple as just saying, well, we're just going to stop focusing on the clock and just playing fast, because guess what? If the Rockets miss a lot of threes and they shoot 5 seconds into the shot clock for four possessions late and the other team gets hot, then you guys are going to be complaining about that too. There's a balance, and it's never going to be perfect, but all you can ask for, and I think the Rockets are, is to be aware of it, and the only way they're going to get better is to continue to put themselves in those situations and play their way out. And I would say against Golden State, I thought they got a little bit better. I know we're talking 2 weeks ago now, but really, by the second overtime of the game, you saw less stagnation with James Harden. You had more swinging it to the weak side where Eric Gordon made a couple of plays. So there are answers to it. There are hybrids to where you can play a little bit more of the clock and still have the free-flow offense that makes the Rockets so difficult to scout. But you're just going to have to, more than anything else, just learn by doing. Sometimes you'll succeed, sometimes you'll fail, but that's where the Rockets are right now, and I thought the scout was dead on with that. Now, where I question the scout, and I'm sure you guys did as well, were his comments on Mike D'Antoni's offense and how it translates to the playoffs. First off, one thing I disagree with strongly is the idea that it's proven that it does not translate, or that his idea that, you know, his system would be better in the playoffs when defenses can get more disciplined offenses out of their scheme, whereas his is already used to kind of that chaos. I think it's fair to say that. It's not proven that that's false. Now, it's not fair to say that it's proven that it's true, but I don't think you can say that, well, he's failed. Here's the thing with D'Antoni and Phoenix. Remember that back then especially, he was a very unconventional coach. Now, the irony is that his principles have translated to so many different teams, including the Warriors right now, that it's much more accepted, even though the Rockets are still faster than most. But back then, he was on an island, and any walk of life, if you are doing something different than the way the existing power structure does it, there is going to be pushback. So there are a lot of guys who were waiting for Mike D'Antoni to fail and were eager to, you know, kind of trump up those charges, because if he were to succeed, it would change the way of life for a lot of teams around the NBA. And of course, the irony is that really it did. It took a little bit more time, but we're absolutely seeing that. But back in the day, especially 10 years ago, when those Suns teams were so unique in terms of how they played, there was a lot of pushback. And it would be because, well, it potentially changes your livelihood. It forces you to do something that you've done one way for years, if not decades, and do something a little bit different. Nobody wants to do that. Everybody thinks they're right. Everybody wants to do what they're comfortable with. So I think there were a lot of people that were kind of eager to push back against Mike D'Antoni. But the thing that I really object to in all this is the characterization that the playoffs are something different. Now, I said last night in our post-game recap of the Kings that I thought maybe the Rockets were a great regular season team because the pace at which they play, all the threes they make, you can just psychologically bury teams early. To a very small extent, yes, we're talking about maybe two or three games over the course of a year. We are not talking about just a night and day difference of, well, this team can succeed in the regular season, but not the playoffs. And it seems that's what this narrative that's out there for a lot of NBA fans, that's what they're saying. So what I wanted to do now, and the scout is what made me think of it, is go back and look at those Phoenix teams. Basically, from 2005 through 2008, they had four teams that were really good. In Mike D'Antoni's era, they had four teams that won 54 more games, and they were in the mix in the Western Conference, and here's what they did. Season-by-season win totals, 62, 54, 61, and 55. That's good, yes. That averages out in the upper 50s. You will happily take that any year. That would put you in the mix. That's right where the Rockets are now, or at least on pace to be. However, it is not elite. This is not the 73-9 Warriors from a year ago who somehow did not win an NBA title. By the way, do you guys remember that they blew a 3-1 lead? Just had to throw that in there. Anyway, back to D'Antoni and the Suns. Those were very good teams. They were not off-the-charts elite teams. They were in that range where they're good. So are a lot of other teams. For perspective, one of those years that they won 55 games, they were the sixth seed in the Western Conference. That's how loaded it was back then. So yes, they were a good team, but there were lots of other good ones. And the reason I point that out is because we have this tendency, I've noticed, that if somebody doesn't win a ring, then we cry bloody murder and act like something had to go wrong. It's kind of like people who say that Harden and Dwight were a failure. My response to them, you kidding me? Dwight helped the Rockets win 54 and 56 games his first 2 years. They made it to the Western Conference Finals. He was the best player on the team in the playoffs. It wasn't a failure. They just didn't win a ring. It's really freaking hard to win a ring. There's so many good teams in the playoffs. There's, what, 30 freaking teams in the league? And you're talking about being the one, and these days the talent is at the upper echelon is so high. When you look at the Warriors and Cavaliers, the true contenders, the bar is higher than it's ever been. If your standard is winning a championship or bust, then for almost anybody, it's going to be bust. That's way too high of a standard. That's why I thought it was so ridiculous, people saying earlier this offseason, the people that put out the fire Daryl Morey garbage. Under Morey, the Rockets have won the third most games in the NBA in the last 10 years. Actually, they might be second now. I haven't looked, but with Dallas losing as many games, Rockets have to be fairly close to overtaking them. Rockets haven't won a championship because the stars haven't aligned in a given year just yet, but they have been a really good franchise. So if your standard is championship or bust, that's almost always unfair. There are just way too many good teams. There are rare occasions where you can say that. For example, last year with the Warriors, if you are 73-9, if you are so damn good that you just shattered the all-time wins record, then yeah, at that point, if you don't win a championship, it is a little disappointing. But if you're on a normal team, and like I said, those Suns teams, 62, 54, 61, and 55 wins, you can't say that they didn't win a championship, so it was a bust. You have to look deeper. Those are pretty good teams. And the reason I say that is because there's just the talk and the kind of narrative that the scout put out there is that there's something different about Mike D'Antoni's playoff teams versus his regular season teams. And from everything I can tell, the data does not show that. They were a pretty good regular season team. They're also a pretty good playoff team. They weren't the best playoff team. You know what? They also weren't the best regular season team either in most of those cases. It's important to keep that perspective, because if we're going to say that Mike D'Antoni's offense fails in the playoffs, then what you need to show for that to be true is some kind of break between regular season performance and playoff performance. And when I look at those Suns teams, I don't see it. Now, let's just go beyond the regular season win totals. They played 9 playoff series in those 4 seasons. They won 5 of them. They won more playoff series than they lost. 2 of the 4 years, they made it to the Western Conference Finals. So in those 4 years, made it to the Western Conference Finals twice, won 5 playoff series. Guys, does that sound like a team that did not function in the playoffs? That, well, the style just didn't translate? It sure doesn't to me. Actually, 3 of their 4 playoff series losses came against the Spurs with Tim Duncan in his prime. 2 of those 3 times, the Spurs went on to win the NBA championship. And we're talking about one of the greatest big men to ever play the game in Tim Duncan. So really, if you take out the Spurs, if you take out Tim Duncan, the Suns won 5 of their 6 playoff series with Mike D'Antoni in those 4 years. So are we really going to say that playoff basketball and Mike D'Antoni does not mix? Actually, what I think, when you look at those teams, to me, it says more about Tim Duncan and the San Antonio Spurs than it does the Phoenix Suns. For me personally, my recollection of this, and I said this for years, it was never about Mike D'Antoni. It was never about Steve Nash. It was that Tim Duncan was the perfect foil for those Suns teams, because it was kind of a catch-22 with Amari Stoudemire at the center spot, and that was where the real mismatch came. Amari Stoudemire essentially Montrezl Harrell on all sorts of steroids. But with Amari, if you tried to put a traditional center like Shaquille O'Neal against him, his speed would just overwhelm them. Even if, you know, the opposing center had a power advantage or a size advantage, Amari was just so athletic that he could just run right by them. And if you tried to match up speed for speed with them and put more of an athlete at center, well, Amari was stronger than them. And he was also probably a little bit better athlete, too, because in addition to having strength, Amari before the knee injuries, and he was just an out-of-this-world athlete. But it was just the ultimate catch-22. No matter what you did, you, in theory, you'd like to beat the Suns with power. You'd like to slow the game down, make it a grind, as we said about these Rockets. But if you did that, Amari could generally just run around you. And if you tried to match them athletically, then you were playing at their pace, you were playing their game, and it's really tough to beat a team like that at their game. And so that's why they were such a brutal matchup for most teams in the West in that period, including the Rockets, where Yao Ming certainly struggled in those matchups because while he had the power, he did not really, Amari gave him problems from an athletic standpoint. The one exception was the Spurs because Tim Duncan in the middle, Tim Duncan was the perfect storm, a guy who, he was strong enough to take advantage of Amari around the basket. He was more of a presence, yet he also had the athleticism to go out and play in space. It wasn't like he could just draw Tim Duncan away from the basket and drive around him or expose him in the pick and roll game. Duncan was the rare combination of physical enough to be a true anchor at the rim, but also athletic enough to go out and be a good defender in space. There are very few big men like him in the history of the NBA. He was a brutal matchup for the Suns. And the Spurs, it wasn't just the Suns. Spurs won the title in two of those 4 years. So, yeah, I don't think when you look at the evidence, evidence doesn't show Mike D'Antoni's system not working out with the Phoenix Suns. Evidence shows they were a good playoff team. When they didn't play the Spurs, they won 5 of 6 playoff series. In those 4 years, they made the Western Conference Finals twice. It's just the Spurs with Tim Duncan, one of the top 10 players ever to play the game, were just a little bit better. And Duncan, for Stoudemire in particular, was a tough matchup, and so that's the way it went. Matchups matter, guys. I don't know if the 94 Rockets, the first team to win a ring in Houston, goes all the way, if not for the Sonics getting unexpectedly beaten in round one by Denver. Those Rockets teams matched up horribly with Seattle. It was a matchup nightmare, just like the Spurs were for the Suns. Rockets just got the right balance. Seattle got taken out early, and the Rockets, to their credit, took advantage and went out and won a ring. But that's the way it goes. Another thing we should point out in 2007, along the bad luck theme, that was the year that I thought the Suns had the best chance to take out the Spurs. They advanced to the Western Conference Finals. They were winning game four, about to close it out in San Antonio, tying the series at two, putting the Suns in position, basically a best of three series with two of the last three in Phoenix. And I'm sure many of you guys remember what happened. With 30 seconds left, Robert Horry just committed a blatant check of Steve Nash. Thankfully, Nash wasn't hurt that badly, but it was a very dirty play. And several guys with the Suns, including Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw off the bench, were very upset. And as a reflex, they rushed towards the court, and they put 1 foot on the court. They didn't get in the mix. They literally left the bench area by 1 foot. But the rule is, we all know it, with the NBA, you cannot leave the bench area. That's how they prevent brawls. And Stoudemire and Diaw were suspended. And Stoudemire being, you know, the X factor for those Suns teams, he missed game five in Phoenix. Suns lost that game. And then they went on to lose game six in San Antonio and lose the series. But basically, Stoudemire being suspended for that game five on that fluke play, that was basically the series. Suns had the upper hand until that suspension, and it happens. And that's sports, and you know, it doesn't take away anything for the Spurs, but when you're talking about predictive value from a situation like that, you have to acknowledge the role of luck. And in that case, Suns had some really good teams, and that series, and I'd say really for that four-year span, they just didn't have the right bounces when it mattered. And you know what? Sometimes that just happens. The Rockets got the bounces in 94. The Suns did not get that kind of bounce in 2007. Such is sports. But not everything is deserved, and so I think there's this tendency, and we see it all the time, to think that all these results are fair and just, and because something happens 1 year, then it's automatically going to happen the rest. No, it doesn't really work that way. But to get back to the main point, which is Mike D'Antoni coaching this year's Rockets team and how that might translate to the playoffs down the line, when you look at his track record in Phoenix, Do y'all see anything that suggests the team performed appreciably worse in the playoffs than their win totals? Again, 62, 54, 61, 55 wins. Those are good totals. Those aren't out of this world great. As I said, the 55 win year, they were the sixth seed. That's just the way it goes. The Western Conference, especially back then, was absolutely loaded. So they were one of a lot of good teams, and they had some success. They won five playoff series. They went to the Western Conference Finals twice. They didn't win a ring. But you know what? If that's your standard, I find that to be very unrealistic, because the Rockets, spoiler alert, they're probably not going to win a championship this year. But I can tell you, barring something extraordinary happening down the stretch of this year, or somehow getting swept in the first round, something crazy like that, there's a good chance I'm going to be pretty happy with this season, even though they did not win a ring. It's just way too high of a standard, and most people understand that if you talk to them about it logically. But I think the thing with this Mike D'Antoni thing, it's a bit of an urban legend, because as I was explaining, especially back then, there were a lot of people who wanted that type of system to fail. And so when it did, even if it was, you know, expected, and, you know, a great Spurs team should just get credit for being a great team, they exaggerated it. And then the further away you get from it, the more this urban legend just kind of takes on a life of its own. And before you know it, people say, well, this Mike D'Antoni thing, well, he'll win a lot of regular season games, but it just doesn't translate to the playoffs. When you actually look at the evidence, guys, I don't see much of that at all. So I think the scout had a lot of good points as far as James Harden and this year's Rockets team, how to defend them and the difficulties in doing so. When it comes to Mike D'Antoni's history, guys, I think he's wrong. Now, I'm not accusing him of necessarily distorting the truth. I think what's happened here, a lot of guys who were not just kind of innocent bystanders, I would say, just this reputation has kind of picked up a life of its own, and before you know it, it seeps into everybody. It's kind of the same way we had a different scout in the offseason talking about how he didn't think James Harden was a point guard. He thought he was too selfish and only wanted to win a scoring title. I don't know if that scout really knew that much about James Harden. It's just you constantly hear something over and over again, and yeah, it slips in. If you guys didn't read the story about Daryl Morey last weekend, and kind of this changing psychology of the NBA and the scouting process, I strongly urge you to do it, written by Michael Lewis over at Slate. And one of the things it talks about with Morey and the Rockets, so many interesting anecdotes, but what stood out to me the most, it's actually said that Morey banned nicknames from being used within the Rockets administration, because I forgot who it was, but they gave a nickname to someone in a draft, I think at the end of the 2000s, and ended up kind of sticking, and they never took this guy because of this nickname, and he ended up being pretty good. So this stuff is kind of pervasive. Even if you think you're a scout, even if you try to do your best, if you constantly hear this kind of talk, eventually it's, you know, it seeps in. And even if you don't necessarily believe it, even if you don't never did that much research on it, if you just constantly hear this urban legend and you don't really take the time to check it out yourself, you just start to accept it. And I think that's what's kind of happened with, you know, the rewritten history of what happened with those Mike D'Antoni Suns teams. In reality, guys, I don't think it's that bad. I think they were a very similar regular season team to a playoff team, and they just unfortunately did not win a ring, but they were certainly very competitive in the playoffs, and if the Rockets are very competitive in the playoffs this year, I will happily take that. Now, again, you can say, well, why didn't they win more games in the regular season? And it's fair to say that, because while they were a good team, they never took the next step. And, you know, until they do, it's always fair to question, can Coach X, can GM X, can Player X, you know, can they be a true contender? You can always say that. Where I draw the line is in these characterizations that there was something different between the regular season performance and the playoff performance that shows you that this scheme, this style does not work in a playoff environment. And, guys, I'm seeing nothing to show that. So that would be my take. Enjoy the wins now, but don't buy into the narrative of that we're already starting to see around NBA Twitter of, well, Mike D'Antoni, they're going to win in the regular season, then they're going to flame out in the playoffs. That is rewriting history. That is not what has happened. Just enjoy the wins as they come, and when the playoffs get here, it's going to be about matchups. Tim Duncan and those Spurs teams were a bad matchup for Phoenix with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. Hopefully the Rockets get some better matchups this year and in the years ahead. We'll see. But for right now, I just thought it was important to push back, because with the Rockets continuing to roll and put up so many wins, now 19-7, 8 in a row, we're starting to see the conversation shift from, well, how good is this team now, to how good is this team going to be in the playoffs? And I wanted to give this as kind of a reference point to whenever you hear somebody, you know, try to throw some cold water because of Mike D'Antoni and playoff history, keep all this stuff in mind. Anyway, I'll wrap up here. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. I know we didn't talk too much Rockets specific, and that's because, well, it's Thursday. Today's an off day. So I thought it was a good time to delve into a few bigger picture items, including Mike D'Antoni, because I've seen that going around a little bit lately, and I hope I addressed it sufficiently. If I did not, please reach out to me and let me know. You can access me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. You can also email me at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, or you can even follow the show at LockedOnRockets if you so choose. We'll be getting back to the nitty-gritty of 2016-2017 Rockets basketball tomorrow when the Rockets conclude the four-game homestand at Toyota Center against the New Orleans Pelicans, and I look forward to chatting with all of you then. Have a great day.